This is the Skies Blue Podcast.
Welcome to an end of season special, the Sky is Blue podcast with me, Phil Tilley, Darrell Carpenter, Paul Fisher and Stuart Basson, the oldest and most informed podcast that you'll get anywhere on your, well, device, I suppose, got to say, you can't say wireless or anything these days. I shouldn't think how many years service we've got between us in one way or another, but we're all long enough in the tooth and, well, Darrell, somebody who's equally long in the tooth as me. Seasons like the one that we just had don't come along very often, do they?
They don't, mate. No. No. I have to say, I was reflecting back last week on a couple of games. Okay. The first one in the National League away at Ebbsfleet, which we won with a Zavon Hines penalty. And I had reason to, therefore, look up the team, which read Jalal, Evans, Smith, Muggleton, Barry, Nelson, Talbot, Weston, Carter, Hines, and Ugwu.
I think we beat that one with the current one.
I fancy we might. And then the lowest point, personally, of our 6 years in the National League was during, I'm sure it was during Sheridan's second coming, 26th of November 2019.
Oh, I know what you're going to say, yeah. Oh.
Sutton United, 4-0.
No. Mm. Chesterfield 1, Hartlepool 5.
5.
Oh, yeah.
And I actually walked out of the game on 55 minutes in tears. Yeah. In tears, because I couldn't see us ending up anywhere other than National League North and oblivion at that point. And I actually had to get one of the stewards to let me out. And I was walking across...
Should have told him you were having a cigarette.
Yeah, I was walking across the car park in the rain. In a sense of utter despair. I mean, I can't sum it up any other way. Utter despair. And I vowed that was going to be my last game because I just couldn't face the pain anymore.
And I assume you had a season ticket that season, Daz.
Yes. Normal. Yeah, absolutely. And it took many weeks and much cajoling from the massive to get me back. I did miss quite a number of games because I stopped looking at results. I wasn't engaged in any way. I just couldn't stand the pain of it anymore. I just felt I'd been kicked in the you-know-whats so often, and I couldn't face it. And now look at us, you know, getting back to your original question, 5,000 record season ticket just sold, just announced in the last hour or two, and record points total, record number of goals, you know, record number of wins, et cetera, a squad that, I think we all will no doubt talk about later, but with minimal additions can probably go again. So, yeah, amazing turnaround, mate. Amazing.
And just to put it into some perspective, I mean, that match in its own right individually was a shocker, but it was in a run of five straight home defeats. I'm just looking at that. Chorley, Hartlepool, Bromley, Yeovil, Notts County. And then the run was ended, not with a win, but with a draw against Solihull after we were 2-0 up. So, and they scored in the last minute. So it wasn't really a great outcome of the to end the unbeaten run at home either. But yeah, there were low points. Your low point, Stuart?
Gosh. Well, there were so many. I mean, on a personal on a personal sort of front, it would obviously be the kind of continued unwillingness to attend because of certain disagreements, you know, with administrative staff, shall we say, at the time. From a team point of view, the low. In all honesty, it's difficult to pick one out because it was all just one big low, you know. I was speaking to the chap at the DT about this the other day. Really, from the end of the season before we got relegated, you know, until the day that the trust walked into to the office and said we're in charge now, you know. Because you could see the writing on the wall, and the fact that we actually did get relegated into the National League wasn't really. It was just another. Oh, all right, then we got relegated. You know, because you could see it coming. You know, you could see it coming like a train coming up to Chesterfield Station. You know, and it just got bigger and bigger and bigger and noisier and noisier and noisier, and then it arrived. You know. A specific game, I honestly can't think of one. I imagine it'll probably be Solihull Moors. I don't know, something like when Craig Weston got sent off, and you know, and then they kind of outhoused their way to victory, something like that. You know, because you just got dragged down into all that, didn't you? And all that sort of thing was. There's some nice things about the National League, but all that sort of thing was absolutely the worst thing about it, you know. And we got ourselves dragged into that.
We could nip to Wembley next week and ask the 1,000 Solihull fans which their high point of their time in the National League was. Shouldn't take too long to do that. Well, before I ask Paul the same question, I'll have time to think about it. Sorry for dropping that on, Stuart.
No.
And which is very rare for this podcast. My lowest point was that 4-0, but it was actually at Sutton just a few weeks before the 5-1 home defeat against Hartlepool United. You know, Sutton, obviously they were on their way to win promotion, but Chesterfield just almost didn't bother turning up and playing. And on the way back, having been for my low point of play, I could see things starting to change because Graham Bean, who I'd known for years before he became chief executive at Chesterfield, I'd known him before he joined the Football Association when he was a police officer, and he rang me up and said he'd been talking to Dave Allen, and that resulted said that right, okay, Dave wants out now. Definitely wants out. So you could feel it was the beginning of the next chapter. And whilst it took, you know, thick end of a year, that game at Sutton United was a little bit before it was in September. So it took 11 months for the trust to get out, but to come in. But it gave the feel that Dave Allen was ready to move on. And at that point, various consortia started talking to Dave Allen and started getting a feel that, you know, it is likely that an ownership issue will change. And say it took 11 months, but we got there in the end. What about you, Paul?
It all started. I mean, it was kind of a novelty to start with because I went to the Ebbsfleet game. And just thought, right, okay, I'm going to try and go to as many games as possible. But as soon as they lost at Salford,
Yeah, Salford was the first, wasn't it? 3-2. Yeah, good game. I wasn't there.
It was a good game.
But it was a good game, wasn't it?
They'd lost at Barrow, I think, on the Tuesday, then lost at Salford. It was just, they didn't win again till playing Salford again in December. And that was a real low point. And then Martin Allen making a, trying to instill a sort of positive vibe out of it, out of an unbeaten record of draws. That they hadn't won for more games, but he tried to make something light out of it. It was a club record. It just didn't. It was so surreal at that particular point that it didn't. I didn't understand quite what was going off. And then I just thought, this is just ridiculous. And I thank God I was working away for most games anyway. So I went to the opening day of the next season to when they played Dover on the opening day. Went one up, but great.
Yes, fine.
Yeah, went one up. And two identical goals within about the last 10 minutes that Dover, this is fucking Dover, do you know what I mean, scored. On the opening day, I thought this is going to be an absolute shit show. This is going to be, this season's going to be absolutely awful. And you just knew it. And they very nearly got relegated that year. It was only thanks to 0.08 of a bloody points per game thing. They didn't get chuffing relegated in the first place. And you just knew from game one that it was just going to get worse and worse and worse, and it bloody well did. So yeah, Dover home, losing 2-1 that game, awful.
Yeah, and of course Alfie Pavey, who scored both of those goals, you know, he kept on popping up for various teams against us, didn't he, as several players did over the years. Yeah, 9 consecutive draws that season. Really,
it's so ridiculous that season, that 2018-19 season, absolutely mental.
Yeah, and really a low ebb for the club as well as the team. But Alfie Pavey still playing for Woking this season. Played in the game that Chesterfield won 2-0 away at Woking in November. Well, almost the anniversary of that Hartlepool game. Just looking, it was the 21st of November, 2023. Mm-hmm. That 2-0 win against Woking. So let's flip it on its head there. High point of this season then. We'll go in the same order, Stu.
The fight back against Solihull Moors at home.
Mhm.
2-0 down, weren't we? Having lost 2-0 the match before to them, you know, 2-0 down at home, and you felt that if something didn't happen, the crowd might turn. Yeah. You know. And of course, something happened. You know, 3 goals in 6 minutes, was it, or something?
Yeah.
You know, and we just didn't look back in mind that. And then we had that whole January, you know, sorry.
Yeah, bearing in mind the Boxing Day match, 2-0 loss at Solihull a few days earlier, had been the first time that Chesterfield hadn't scored this season. There were a lot of people starting to say, oh, you know, we concede too many goals and we've started that we can't score.
Yeah. One game. Yeah. But you know, I mean, that set up our January. And it was in that January, well, that sort of period that we effectively won the title, wasn't it? Yeah. You know, so that kind of fight back and that turnaround. And as the first and the second one went in, there was just this, you just sensed this momentum. You sensed that the players had grasped this thing turning, and you sensed that the crowd had as well. And you know, the crowd was, I think, the noisiest probably all season that day, to me anyway.
And just put it into perspective, you know, how successful this season's been. Stuart's low point there on Boxing Day left Chesterfield only 7 points clear with 2 games in hand. we're coming from a slightly different perspective than where, if you don't manage to beat Chorley, you're going to be playing whoever was in the National League North at that particular time. So
yeah.
Not a bad low point to him, but he's 7 points clear and 2 points 2 games in hand as well. Daz?
I'll go a few weeks earlier than that. When we beat Barnet at home.
Yes.
Because we'd had a great start. We were on a roll. We'd come back in a number of games, hadn't we? Hartlepool at home, for instance, and one or two others, and won when you didn't think they would. We tried to throw games away like at Aldershot and had still managed to find a way to win, which are all the traits of a side that's going to go up. We've all been watching football long enough. And of course, Barnet were being fairly relentless, annoyingly relentless, actually, at that time. And they were talking it up in the media and social media and God knows what else, saying, oh, well, we haven't played anybody yet, kind of thing. And I think a couple of weeks before, they'd played Dorking away on the telly. And Dorking had been 2-0 up and had absolutely battered them, much like they did with us later on in the season. And I thought, how the hell are they winning football matches playing like that? You know what I mean? And they came out the second half and got 4, I think.
3-2.
Was it? Yeah. Turned it round completely against everything that you would have expected. And they were getting loads of late goals and nicking wins. And every time you look, it's 2-2 at Barnet, or they're losing 2-1 away, and they get a 99th minute bloody winner or equaliser. It was happening every week, wasn't it? And you just thought, oh, God, we can't shake them off. And
their run, Daz, at the time they came to play us in the game you're talking about, was 1-1, 1-1, 1-1, 1-1, 1-1, and then they won in the FA Cup the week before they played us.
Yeah, they were becoming a bit annoying, frankly. And so when we spluttered, let's be honest, it was a full house. The place was absolutely rocking, wasn't it? The expectation in the air and a bit of trepidation, I think, because we thought, well, we've got to show them who's boss today. And first half, we did anything but show them who's boss, and could easily have gone in behind, let's be honest. And then whatever happened, or was said at halftime, we came out and for 25 minutes, we were unplayable, absolutely unplayable. And you thought, I know we conceded the 2 daft goals in injury time, but the game was over, wasn't it? And what we'd done was put a marker down to the next best team in the division, as was proved, and to the rest of the division to say, you know, you've got to find something better than that, boys, because we can play for half a game or 25 minutes and blow you away. And for me, that was planting the marker in the sand to say, this is the standard. Can you match it? And no one could they? No one could. Yeah.
And you say it was a 9,667 crowd. So like you say, Chesterfield, how many times over the years have you got the big crowd in and disappointed?
Yeah, yeah.
But I remember saying at half time, you know, how well the defence had played after, you know, having had plenty of criticism before and subsequent. But the most important thing was I remember saying, as I've said in the opposite way around many times, is about if you don't take your chances when you're on top. That's what Barnet didn't do. They could have been 3-0 up at half time. There's no question about that. But our defence played really well. Goalkeeper played really well. And as you say, 50 minutes, 1-0 to Chesterfield, and there was no looking back there. It was a massive marker, as was the 2-0 win at Barnet later on in the season, which was a very, very different performance, but an absolute classic away victory in an important match. You know, that was a copybook performance, wasn't it? Paul, your high point?
Yeah, I kind of got a mixture of two, really, both away games, but with two different performances. One away at Boreham Wood was the first time I think we'd won there this season. Absolutely bossed it from minute one and won 2-0, comfortable. And you never got that at Boreham Wood before. You know, there was always something about them. Exactly, you know. But absolutely bossed the game. It was one of those performances where you think, right, yeah, this we're onto something. We're better than what we were previously. You know, we're getting better. And then it was a sort of week or the end of the month later against Kidderminster. There was a proper away performance, Kidderminster. You know, we went one up. They hit back. It was a good game. Second half, Chesterfield just turned it up that extra level and looked like champions. You know, with that third goal in particular, that stunning counter-attack, that just epitomised the whole season, I felt. Berry, Naylor, Grigg.
Yeah.
It was just a brilliant goal, that one. In my opinion, that was goal of the season. But that performance at Kidderminster, I just felt, yeah, this is really special. This is what champions are made of in that. And I know that they were struggling at the time. And
they played really well. Kidderminster really played
did,
well.
They did, yeah. Yeah. But just to get 3 points there, and I thought, yeah, brilliant. And then we took it, not that it's included in my favourite high points, but we took it, and sorry, Stu, but we dominated the game against Portsmouth the week after, didn't we, in the FA Cup, which was really good as well. So, but yeah, I think Boreham Wood away and Kidderminster away, real high points for me.
It's interesting when a lot of the players have been asked at various things in various ways, and for various sort of publications or whatever, what their favourite moments would be. And do you know what? A massively high proportion of players, their high point was the match at Watford in the FA Cup. Because point, they just realised that you could take a pretty decent potential playoff championship side right to the wire. Yeah. And 4,000 fans cheering you on. And again, they're... flip it on the other side. Their lowest point was the fact that Joe didn't score in the end in front of the Chesterfield fans. But the players themselves universally loved that game because they were testing themselves against much, much better opposition, and they matched them. And as we all thought at the time, that was a perfect result because, you know, Barnet and Bromley fell behind because they were playing in the Trophy. I know they both got second and third, but they fell behind by carrying on in the Trophy. And it's proved maybe that was a bridge too far, because where are they? Well, yeah, probably at the final, aren't they? But, it certainly for Barnet, they might have just had too many matches and not enough players of enough quality and enough depth. Who knows? Who knows? But certainly, you know, that semi-final home defeat was one that none of us saw coming. Well, not in the manner that it occurred against the aforementioned Solihull. Funnily enough, my high point wasn't on the park. It was the civic reception the other Sunday when 7,000 people, and that was the town hall and the authorities' estimate of how many people turn up, not me just saying a number, came to watch Jamie Grounds lift the cup for the third time.
Yeah.
Not the first. We had that against Boreham Wood. Not the second. We had that on the last day of the season against Mason United. But a third time, you know, it's like, well, let's go and see it again. We'll go and see it again. And I was lucky enough to be inside the town hall talking to all sorts of people, not necessarily supporters, but Chesterfield people. And they were all universally saying just how massive it was for the town, and the amount of finance that it brings in and everything along those lines for the town. So for me, you know, the trappings of success. But the third time, you know, if we'd have won the title on the last day of the season away at wherever, and so that would have been the first time Chesterfield folks had ever seen the trophy being lifted, I could have understood it.
Yeah.
But I couldn't get my head around how many people were there to see it again, just in case they missed it the first and the second times.
Well, I was in the town hall as well. You may remember that I was there briefly. I was a shadow of my former self because I'd been out with the Worcester Spireites the night before, and apparently I didn't get in till 3 a.m. So I was incredibly hungover at the town hall. So still with a job to do.
So, I think the town's response to the club's success has been one of the great sort of feel-good things of the season, hasn't it? I mean, we got more to a kit launch than Halifax and Oldham got to a National League game, at stadium, you know, didn't we?
That again was surreal. That kit launch. I mean, we were all blown over a year before with
the churchyard,
the town hall, wasn't it?
Well,
but, yeah. When
there's another example as well that Chesterfield took more to a kit launch than it took Solihull a day for Wembley sales to get rid of. I mean, it's a kit launch that lasted, what, an hour and a half best? So it took more to that than the whole day's worth of Wembley sales for Solihull then. So.
No, it was
stunning, isn't it? Really,
it was a bizarre day.
When you consider how far shot we were just a few years ago, you know.
Yeah. Well, one of the things Paul's always in charge of this, and he's the man that comes up with ideas and everything. One of the sentences put reflection of where we've come from. Well, that kit lodge, I think, says everything, doesn't it, about it?
Oh. Yeah, talk about coming out of the darkness into the light. I mean, you could almost get religious, couldn't you? It's been amazing. And I am so pleased for so many people who, like yourself, Phil, Stuart, Paul, you know, the Mike Goodwin, Pete Whiteley, John Crute, Andy Phantom, who live, eat, breathe this football club and have done for donkey's years and will almost put it ahead of anything else in life and have done on more than one occasion. And Pete put a tweet up the other day which made me chuckle, and he said, when approached by somebody with the idea during COVID of buying the club, he thought it was the silliest idea he'd ever heard. And I think the general outpouring on Twitter was, it was the best silliest idea you've ever heard. I mean, it's an amazing transformation, and I'm so pleased for, as I say, the people that know, the people that have been there through thick and thin, mostly thin, that got so thin it was almost transparent at one point. And to see the kids and the number of women going to the games and kids wearing kits and, yeah, kit launches and season tickets and full grounds. I mean, the last game of the season sold out, 8-10 weeks before the end of the season? Yeah. Something daft. It's incredible. I've never seen this level of engagement from the general populace of Chesterfield in this football club. Never in my lifetime.
No. I absolutely agree. Highest average crowd since 1972 season. There were those 67-8 through to 72-3 when there were really good crowds, weren't there? But they did vary tremendously from match to match. Stuart, you know, my favourite statistic that comes out, that, you know, you're the gatekeeper, is this season is the highest, lowest home crowd of the season for however long it is.
It's about 1956 or something.
Do you know what the crowd was for Chesterfield's last home game before the Trust took over? It was 2,912.
Is it that Yeovil game?
No, it was Harrogate. We played Harrogate on a
Tuesday. Oh, right, yeah.
Lost 4-3.
2,912 against a team that were being promoted. So, the beginning of March. Of course, football closed down after the 14th of March, after that 1-1 draw at Dover Athletic. But, the game before that had been 3,346, which was the 4-0 victory over Ebbsfleet when Nathan Tyson came off the bench and scored that hat-trick. And just to put how two teams have changed, not just one, how two teams have changed, the third last home game that season before COVID was Chesterfield 3, Wrexham 2, when I assume it was the match that Western scored that last game. That crowd was 3,728.
Oh,
so that shows how two teams have changed, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But the crowds, Stu, have just been bonkers.
They have, haven't they? You look at the top 10 crowds for a Chesterfield match at the new stadium. We're still calling it a new stadium after 10 or 11 years. And five of them are National League games, you know. And I think four of those five have been in the last kind of 12 months, you know. Just the way that the town has engaged with its football club. I don't think anybody else could have done that apart from the trust, you know, because I think a lot of that is down to the hard work that the trust put in on a daily basis, going out to schools and reaching out to community groups and, you know, people who need things more than the rest of us do and all that sort of, you know, it all builds up this really positive picture of something that's happening at this football club, you know. And I think that makes it really easy for people to engage with the team that plays on a Saturday.
Yeah. And Paul, the recent, very recent change of ownership with the Kirk brothers coming in and take the majority, how that's been really well warm, local people and all that. But the fact that it came via the trust rather than just some random people that nobody particularly knew who they were, even if they were exactly the same people with exactly the same views. The fact that it came through the trust, Paul, makes people buy into the Kirk brothers even more because it's come through a much, much better system than the Football League or the National League's fit and proper persons test.
Yes, indeed. And we have to thank Andy Phantom for that, don't we? For it. He knew Ashley, I think, didn't he? Or something like that. Anyway, from that point of view. And to be fair, that the Kirk
brothers... I may be wrong, but I think they're... that their respective parents knew each other, so they'd they'd got family ties. I'm not 100% sure on that, but I think
next door neighbours.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. And Andy's woman lived next to the Kirks, and he's known them since they were knee high to a what's it.
but they've always been on the fringes, haven't they? Of Chesterfield support, you know, not necessarily going every week, but they've always been there or thereabouts, haven't they? Or is that right, Daryl?
Yeah, but of course they sort of went away to uni, started their own businesses, went to London and this and that and the other. And, you know, in Phil's case, and I think Ash has always remained relatively local. But I mean, they've gone away, made the fortunes, if you like, and then come back. But they've never changed their allegiance to the club, have they? You know, clearly.
No, and that's
Phil
that's
was one of Phil was an original life member of CFSS last time round in similar circumstances.
Yeah.
So Dave Allen's myth that there ain't any millionaires in Chesterfield then is exactly that, isn't it? So so he can put that one to bed, can't he?
All the millionaires in Chesterfield chose to keep a low profile while he was still at the football club.
Exactly.
You know, exactly. I can't think that the Kirks would have been brought in by any of the by the previous chairman and company secretary, and I can't think they would have had the gumption to approach them in the first place. You know, and it's just because the trust is there again. Kirks have felt really comfortable about getting involved.
You know. And going back to your point, Phil. Yes, it is the point is that it is nice that it's come through the trust in a trail of like these are nice people that only got Chesterfield FC at heart. You know, that they are just custodians of the football club. That, you know, they would move on for themselves to the right people, you know, but only if the betterment of the football club. You know, they're not looking to make a quick buck here because they're not going to make one. And they're well aware of that, I'm pretty certain. So, you know, and Phil's made the adage that should Chesterfield get to the promised land of the championship, because that's what it really is, isn't it, this time, then he would perhaps have to call on extra investment to come in. So because football's an expensive business once you get to that type of a tier of English football, isn't it?
My views on as and when, and I think it is a when rather than anything like that, Chesterfield do get through to the championship, get into the championship. I'd just love to see nothing change. Give the players that gave them a chance there. Don't go and chase the dream, because I think the last time I looked, the lowest budget in the Championship was £18 million. So if you chase the dream and spend £10 million, you're still going to be the least funded club. So my view would be try and get some infrastructure improvements with a bit of money you get and come out a stronger club ready to challenge again.
Well, here's a word of warning. Rotherham have twice broken their transfer record of over £1 million by Tony Stewart putting money into the club. They've only won 4 games all season. So, you know, it takes a lot of money to compete in that particular league. Chesterfield just getting there would be a momentous task. Yes. And it's something that everybody would look forward to, though, because it's not happened in our lifetime. So
No, it hasn't. It absolutely hasn't. The last time promotion into that division happened was 1936, Easter Monday, Hartlepool United. Hartlepool's United are Adam Summerton when he nicked that one. Stuart did say it was Hartlepool United that we beat on Easter Monday, but of course we all know it was Hartlepool's United. But hey, such is life. What's an S between...
Entirely ruined the coverage for me, that did, yes.
Yeah. but it was in the first sentence after kickoff, wasn't it? You know. So there you go. But it has been, yeah, that trust with the Kirks also, for me, made me think the first thing that they put a chunk of money into, serious money, Daz, was a training ground. Now, if you're not right, you're not going to put money into the training ground first thing you do, are you?
No. And they clearly listened to Paul Cook as to how important that was. You know, it would be easy to think, well, let's invest in the squad. He said it was more important, or if not equally as important, to get that right. And, you know, I think they've been proved in one season just how important it is. The number of injuries we haven't had, for instance, by being able to train on our own quality pitches throughout what has been the wettest winter in memory, almost every day. And the facility up there, while still needs work, and I know the intention is to try and get some proper buildings on there at some point, or find, you know, somewhere else to go and invest as they've done in that, along with lots, again, of local businesses, you know, willing to get involved and back it and so on and so forth. It's really amazing, because, you know, the days of the squad going round in their own cars to Highfield Park and having to pick up the you-know-what before they train and stuff, and then be kicked off because they hadn't booked it by the local council. Thankfully, those days have gone. And you can't, in this modern era, expect to attract and keep players and keep them match sharp, match fit, without proper facilities that they can use day in, day out. And I think the investment, as you say, Phil, it showed that they were listening to Cookie. They were willing to invest. It would have been so easy just to splash the cash on this player and that player and the other player, but he didn't want to do that, Paul. He knew what money he got available from them, and decided that was the right way to spend a chunk of it, and they were willing to back him to do it.
Well, it's taken 35 minutes, Daz, to mention the PC, Paul Cook. Stuart, what difference has he made to this team, this town, this club, everything along those lines? You know, he doesn't pop out of his cave too often these days, as Paul will know. But there's just something there, isn't there? We all knew he had it last time. But there's something there that's popped out. The man is proper football manager, isn't he?
Well, he is, yes. And I think he gets the club, and I think he gets the town as well. And that's interesting when you consider that he comes from a big city with a fine football tradition and two big football clubs playing in that city, you know. And yet he gets...
Tranmere and Everton.
Well, one since South Liverpool went out of business. I suppose he gets football, doesn't he? And it perhaps doesn't matter where he is, you know. Perhaps I shouldn't think that he's just, you know, as good as he is here because it's here, you know. But he just gets football, and he's just, I don't know, he just seems to be an easy guy to like to me, you know. Not that I've ever met him, but, you know, he just gives me that impression. Knows his stuff, obviously, you know. And he feels it, doesn't he? There's a passion in him that referees and fourth officials probably see as much as anybody else does. He just gets the game, you know, and I don't know, we just not had anybody like that for such a long time, you know.
I'm just going to do a bit of sort of gratuitous self-promotion, or not self-promotion, 1866 sport promotion. On this weekend warm-up, 7 o'clock Friday repeated, 9 o'clock Saturday morning. I dug out, I don't keep archives, sound archives much, but I've got the interviews from the time that Paul Cook came first time round in autumn 2012, including the recording from the introduction, the press conference introduction, and then the post-matches of subsequent first few games. So I've cut together the interviews for his first month at Chesterfield. And if you'd cut those out now and just change the team names, what he was saying then in 2012, Paul, is exactly the same as he says now. You know, he's not changed his football philosophy one jot since he walked into what he says was the first big club he worked at, Chesterfield, in 2012. He's set in his ways, but when you're setting your ways in the right way, Paul, that's not a bad thing to be.
Well, no, that's quite remarkable, isn't it? I mean, you can write down his formation every week. It's absolutely no problem. There's an occasional tweak, isn't there? And it's very rare that happens. But when he went to the Championship with Wigan, he did say that his formation was changed. There was times when he went in there and didn't change the formation, and perhaps he should have done, because it's a different kettle of fish, isn't it? But yeah, he you know, to breed success in that way, you have to have an identity. And it's important to have that identity and then to back it up. Look who's doing well under the same players that that Paul Cook brought in, didn't they? When Ipswich are doing well, aren't they? And then some of the players that he got in there are doing remarkably well, aren't they? So, you know, under his Kieran McKenna, I think he was one of his coaches, wasn't it? Or he was at Man United anyway. But So it breeds identity. He knows what he wants to play, and it's about the players. It's always been about the players. Good players getting into that system, he knows, works. So it works for him. And, you know, like I say, occasionally he'll tweak it, but he knows what he wants. And, you know, he's not going to chop and change all the time, muddle his ideas up. That's how it is. These are the players I'll bring into that system. I know he can work that way, and that's it. That's pretty much as it is, isn't it?
Yeah, well, two of the first four players he brought to Chesterfield were Leon Cooper and Connor Townsend. They're both playing for teams in playoff chasing at the top of the Championship to going towards the Premier League. They were two of the first four players he brought in. You know, that just shows Daz what an eye he's got. Of course, I know he works with recruitment people, but, you know, Leon Cooper was going nowhere with Hull City. Connor Townsend had been loaned out at Grimsby the season before. These were just rank average players at that time, but he knew they were not rank average players.
Yeah, I think he's always had an eye for a player, and we've talked before, haven't we, on this this podcast about the Dan Gardners and the Ollie Bankses, and, you know, players coming in that raised a bit of an eyebrow at the time. What are you doing bringing non-league players into what was then a League One team? And he ain't missed on many over the years. He ain't missed out on very many. And if you look at the four, you know, the transformation again of the squad from the first game he took charge of at Weymouth to the squad as it is today, it's in terms of quality and depth, it is totally unrecognizable. Totally unrecognizable.
Yeah, no, say that again. It's totally unrecognizable.
Yeah.
As opposed to most of our time in the National League, where most of the players that have been signed, if they walked in front of me, it'd be totally unrecognizable.
Yeah.
Because I just back, can't remember who most of them are.
Well, going back to that hateful game against Hartlepool, the one that nearly made me commit Harry Carey, somebody called Coddington in goal.
He was unfortunate, wasn't he? He broke his kneecap, didn't he? So,
I have no real recollection of that person at all.
Lee Shaw,
our man from Grantham, you know, the great...
The Egg Packer.
The Egg Packer. Jay Sheridan. Mike Fondup.
Just released by Oldham.
Still playing for the champions of the National League, isn't he?
Absolutely.
Just released by Oldham.
Jermaine McGlashan.
He's now a coach somewhere.
He is.
Some south, isn't he?
Sam Wedgbury.
Now playing for Buxton.
Worksop. Is it Buxton or Worksop?
Worksop.
Buchanan. You remember the left back?
David Buchanan. I thought he was harshly treated by the previous manager.
And then a guy whose name I can neither pronounce or remember, Nepomuceno?
Giovanni Nepomuceno, old man for Oldham.
What the hell? You just think...
Javaro. We used to just call him Javaro.
And, you know, with all due respect, you poor old Lawrence McGuire was in that team. Evans.
Still.
Denton, Bowden, and then on the bench was Mandeville, Rowley, Smith, Nepo, whatever, Jalal, and Buchanan. And you just think, is there any wonder we were struggling, you know, with all due respect?
Yeah. But we just replaced one load of non-functioning, you know, core of a team with another non-functioning core of a team for a few years, didn't we? You know.
Well, when that season finished, Pembo got the job permanently during COVID, didn't he, at the start of the season, and then he refused to sign anybody, despite having funds to do that.
Allegedly.
We ended up with Milan Butterfield.
Yes.
So, never to be seen again, Milan Butterfield. I don't know where he is now. So that was his team. I mean, basically, there were Jamie Sharman and Luke Rawson were the two young players brought in from the youth, and that was the way forward for the club. And so it didn't last, did it? That 3-2 loss to Altrincham was.
But just to put in the player movement in general until Cookie started sorting it out in the National League. You mentioned about Luke Coddington. The only goalkeeper who has started games for Chesterfield in two different seasons in the National League is Shuan Jalal. He's played more games in goal than any other player for Chesterfield in the National League, and he's the only goalkeeper that started in two different seasons. Coddington is one of a couple who've played in two different seasons, but their appearance in one season was only as a sub to come on for an injured or a sent-off goalkeeper. So there's been no consistency at that point in time in goal. And that's always a vital position. You got to know your guy in goal is going to stop a few goals. So Shuan Jalal's played most games in the National League for any goalkeeper, and he's the only person to have started in two different seasons, which for 6 years is absolutely stupid and shows that the recruitment policy has been rubbish. So there you go. Anyway, let's take a break now, and we'll come back. We'll talk about star players this season, areas to improve, and going forward into the EFL, which I still hate EFL. It's the Football League. Yes, it would be quite interesting if our first game in the EFL was against Newport, wouldn't it? But there you go. So such is life. We all know our star players this season, but we just need to talk about it. The Players' Player of the Year and the Supporters' Player of the Year, Tom Naylor. Paul, we can't argue with that decision, can we? Can we?
No, I don't think so. I think he's been the boss man, I think, from game one, hasn't he? Even in the pre-season, you thought, well, this is a player that just stands out. And, you know, you could tell he'd been playing in the Championship. Perhaps ran out of gas towards the back end of the season, didn't he? But let's talk about the positives that he got. Most goal-scoring season ever in his career from midfield. Box-to-box. And, you know, from his first goal against Oxford, I think it was, away from home, just thought, he's someone who gets in a late run into the box for a header. And, scored plenty of goals. And his all-round consistent performances, I think, have been phenomenal, especially as well when he's been a part of the assists as well. So, pretty, really, really good. And no hesitation for me to be number one.
Yes, and, you know, we talked about Paul Cook earlier, Stuart, his ability to bring players like Naylor, and with those you've got to couple Jacobs and Grigg in there as well. All of these players have said they only moved down to this league because of Paul Cook. Well, Michael Jacobs said at one stage, he says, I moved here because I've got no other offers on the table. But I think that was tongue in cheek more than anything. But, you know, his ability to bring players in of that calibre to this level has been the secret, really, hasn't it? The secret ingredient, Stu.
It has, certainly. Those three players you mentioned have obviously made such a complete difference to this team. And Paul Cook's way that he treats players, the way that he tries to play the game, I'm sure those are two things that players like and respect. Want to belong to a Paul Cook side. You know, he's obviously got an eye for spotting good players. And if he ever got bored with management, he could just as easily go into recruitment for me and make a real success of that as well. But he's got the eye, we were saying before the break, weren't we, about, you know, his record in picking players out. He would have been. I couldn't see players of that stature going to another National League club for any of the other managers, really, you know. And Paul Cook's been head and shoulders the best manager in this league this season. And yes, he does attract players of a really high caliber, and it's quite fun to think, you know, of which EFL Championship players might be prepared to drop down two divisions in the way that the likes of Tom Naylor and Michael Jacobs did themselves at the start of this season. You know, we'll see if Paul Cook's still got that magic with players in the Championship.
And Paul, it's not like Paul Mullin dropping down a couple of divisions to Wrexham with probably not where he probably wasn't earning any less money when he went to Hollywood. These guys all have had opportunities, I'm sure, to earn more money elsewhere. But there's just something there, isn't there? And of course, Will Grigg is there in the same conversation as Tom Naylor for coming down. You know, he'd never even played in League Two before.
No, incredible, wasn't it? Yeah, you know, obviously they'll get paid good money, but not, like you said, Mullin money. Jacobs could have gone to Northampton. That was the closest club to him, you know. But, you know, obviously, props paid that little bit extra, you know, to play and work with a man who he worked before. Was a sort of, you know, fishing rod for Michael Jacobs. Naylor hadn't played under Cook at all. He just played for the same clubs that Cook had managed. But was obviously recommended by Liam Richardson or of that ilk. I'm sure that Cook would have had a word.
And he's a great mate of Will Griggs.
Yeah, Yeah. So, and Greg coming obviously was that the fact definitely Paul Cook. That is the only reason why he would have come. So to get those three calibre star players, and two of them we knew about, Naylor and Grigg, but Jacobs was a very late deal, wasn't it, to get over the line. At one stage it was going to be Jacobs or Berry, and instead they got them both, didn't they? So and cost them a lot of money to get both as well, didn't they? So somebody had to go without a breakfast for a week. So that was a coup, wasn't it? To get those three calibre players, and then your final sign is Miguel Freckleton in August. Just shows that what he got in that pre-season, here's the lads together, the boys together to take us forward. I'm not going to upset the apple cart. Just go and do it. And it worked, didn't it? So, perhaps expect the same recruitment this summer.
I can think of a few managers we've had in the very recent past who would have agreed with the chairman that I'm going to have these players in August and I won't come to you for any more players. And then within a month, they'd have been banging on their door saying, I want four more defenders or something.
Yeah.
But Cook, if that's what he agreed, that's what he stuck with, And that's, again, the measure of the man and his own confidence in his own ability, which I think breeds confidence in everybody around him.
And Daz, the other marquee signing, even though it wasn't necessarily seen as marquee at the time, but it turned out that way in the summer, was Harry Tyra.
Yeah, he'd had a very successful loan spell at Chester, hadn't he, in the National League North.
Yeah,
most clean sheets, I think, and they'd had a run to the playoffs the previous year. And was highly thought of. I knew from my connections at the club that there was talk of a young goalkeeper coming in from Everton. We didn't know which one, and I think like most Premiership teams, they've probably got five or six that you could hang your hat on if you looked at a squad list. But he's learning his trade. He still makes young goalkeeper mistakes. It's about decision making. That's why he's given away a few penalties and punched when he should have caught and stuff like that. But young goalkeepers do that. But he's also stood up when we've needed him to. I mean, that saving a losing cause at Bromley is one of the best saves I've ever seen. I mean, it was an incredible stop. And I think
definitely the best I've ever seen live. Definitely the best I've ever seen live.
And he's just got, I think he's got progressively better as the season's gone on. More commanding. I mean, he's louder. You could hear him even in the big gates. You can hear him shouting to the back floor and communicating and so on. And again, a player that's bought into the project and absolutely loves it. His relationship with the supporters is second to none. Right up there with Tommy Lee in terms of a goalkeeper. Obviously, he's gone back to Everton now, but you would like to think there's a chance we could get him back for another year now we've gone up, because that's part of their progression, isn't it, through the leagues when they send out these lads on loan. And does he need to find another team in League Two? Well, no, he's got a ready-made home. And I think I would like to think with the Dykes connection and everything else that if we speak nicely to him, we might see Harry back in August.
And the thing is, Paul, I think when he signed that additional year to 2025, the extension of his contract with Everton, I felt that made it more likely he'd come back. He's got that presence at Everton. Obviously, Pickford is still very much their number one. They're going to stay up by all now, aren't they, Everton? So, Pickford's not going to be offloaded anywhere else, I wouldn't have thought. Although there's news today about Everton calling in financial advisors, isn't there? Administration advisors, but we'll see what comes of that. But it also shows about Paul Cook and about the club that Ryan Boot has agreed to stay for another year without hardly having a look in.
Yeah. Yeah. And it is obviously. Ryan Boots, he's not been guaranteed anything, I wouldn't have thought. We're signing that. So just that you come and fight for the place. You've obviously enjoyed it here. It's a club on the up. So, you know, come and join in the fun, perhaps be on the same money. You'll probably get more games next year because of the Papa John's Bristol Street, Johnson's Paints, Hullabaloo, FA Cup trophy. Vars thing that they we have to enter, so they might end up playing more games in that, and pushing Harry Tyra all the way. There's no doubt Tyra himself would have benefited from Ryan Boots' experience, and you know, so yeah, I think Tyra signing an extra deal at Everton means that they still think of him as a prospect. He's got four goalkeepers ahead of him, though. One of them's 40-odd years old in Andy Lonergan. So try and push him out of the way. There's a Portuguese second number two, and then Pickford, who's the England number one. So there's a fair few tunnels to get through there, isn't there, before he's even considered to be even close to Everton's bench, you know. So so staying with Chesterfield would be a smart move from his point of view, I'd say.
No, I absolutely agree. Now, one of the things that we've talked about those signings, and of course, let's not forget the likes of James Berry as well, who made a massive impact on the squad. But there were plenty of players who were here last season that didn't quite make it over the line that have remained at the club, and there's been improvement seen. The likes of Mandeville has improved again, 20 assists. Jamie Grimes, Armando Dobra, they've all started more than 30 games this season. And then we can sort of go down the list a little bit and see, you know, Mike Jones has been very much used sparingly, but effectively when he's generally coming. Ollie Banks has appeared in most games, but off the bench for quite a lot of them. I definitely think Tyron Williams has improved a lot during the course of the season, despite all of the stuff that people talk about the defence. But Paul Cook improves players as well. You know, our previous manager improved the team by bringing somebody in rather than trying to improve the ones that you'd got. Stuart, that in its, I mean, Mandeville has just developed incredibly under Paul Cook, hasn't he?
Indeed he has, yes. There's so many strings to his bow now, you know. I mean, he came here from Donny, didn't he? And he looked as though he'd kind of lost his way, really, and was perhaps in danger of falling out of love with the game completely, you know. But Paul Cook, as you say, just knows how to get the best out of people, and knows that different people have different needs and different ways that they should be taken care of, you know. I mean, whoever's been able to get Armando Dobra back tackling as effectively as he does, has done this season, is a hell of a good coach, you know. People like Shackleford have come through and, you know, made everybody see why we recruited him a year ago, you know. I suppose the only one who's lost a bit of form really is poor old Jeff King, isn't it? But by and large, everybody else that was here last season has added more to this team's play this season, you know, and they've all improved, really. And they've all improved the team.
Phil. I think it's a good point you made earlier about previous managers bringing players in rather than coaching what they've got. Is that, and I'm going to name John Sheridan here, is that he had just the one coach who sounded like a yes man, rather than a bloke who could be bothered on the training ground. Whereas Paul Cook seems to me like, he's slightly hands off in terms of coaching, but he's got three or four coaches there that he's invested in the backroom staff. We've all got ideas and all put on good training sessions, it sounds like, judging by the interviews brought out this week by Liam. So they've all got ideas themselves to push the players, and the sessions are enjoyable. And it's not just, if you can't do that, you're not as good as me. And like, so, right, I'm going to sack you off and try and get somebody in who's better than you. You know, and let's change the team again and drop everybody's morale. It's all about improving, like you said, Phil, improving what you've got and trying to be, well, I think the word standards, isn't it? have standards for yourself, you know, so and have that level that you can attain to and get it. And every one of the players, and it helps with the winning side, you know, we've won 31 games this season yet, but everyone have, you know, improved, and, you know, that they have.
Yeah. And you mentioned Dobber about backtracking Stewart, you know, and it's not at the expense of his attacking prowess. You know, he scored 11 goals in all competitions last season. He scored 11 goals this season, 8 assists. So not only has he learned to track back and tackle, pretty effectively, it's without loss to his attacking prowess.
Yeah, you worry a bit when you see him kind of get up off the floor and chase berserkly back towards the player who's just took the ball off him. But I mean, how many players in this league have made so many tackles from behind that haven't been penalised? You know, he's just found a knack for doing it. And somebody's presumably, you know, coached, if they haven't coached that into him, they've coached the development of that, you know. And as Paul's saying, having such a big team of coaches, people would look at it and think, well, we've got more coaches than East Midland. What do we want all this lot for, you know? And if we've got all these coaches, we can't have all these players and stuff like that. But the balance is absolutely right. And I think a lot of...
I was going to say for Daz, you know, one of the things for next season, of course, we're probably all not sure about all the rules and regulations, our number of players, squad sizes and everything. I think you can chuck in loads of under 21s, but you know, that apart, I think it's 24, is it, or something like that?
As many keepers as you want. As many goalkeepers as you want.
We play rush goalies.
Yeah. I was going to say, but you can only play one per match, apparently.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
Yeah. 22, what we would call ordinary squad players, and then as many under 21s as you want that came through your academy, I believe, is the.
So technically, Miguel Frackleton would have to be one of the 22.
He would, I believe.
If you haven't got an EFL recognised academy, how does that work then?
I know not, Paul. Yeah. That's a very good question. But that was the broad outline I was told of what the squad makeup had to be.
I'd be amazed, Paul, if Liam Jessop and Riley De Senna, if they were part of any futures, wouldn't be considered to be self-generated. Yeah. As it were. I'd be amazed if they put that level of disadvantage on, because we can't be an academy because we're not in the National League, we can't be. So Paul Cook, with those coaches, the point I was going to make, Daz, is that this season Chesterfield have used not very many more players than that number that they've allowed, but the coaches do put on, they rotate, they put on different sessions. It doesn't get dull and boring because they're doing that. You've got Danny will do your set pieces. And the other guys, Gary Roberts, Paddy Byrne, I assume Paddy will stay on in some form, and Kieran Dyer do the open play sort of stuff and move it around. So having that many, as Paul said, you might look at it and think, oh, that means we're going to have a player or two less. But it means you've got players who are happier Monday to Friday because they're not doing the same dull stuff every day.
Yeah.
No, I mean, you only have to listen to all the interviews that have been done with backroom staff, coaches, players over the last 3 or 4 weeks to see what a tight unit it is and how everybody enjoys everyone else's company and how training's competitive and interesting every day. You know, the lads are putting as much in training as they are in match sessions. Cookie's rotation of the squad this year has been at times baffling and at the same time majestic, because you know, we would think, well, why is he making 5 or 6 changes today, for God's sake, you know, and they go out and produce more or less the same results they did the week before. Now that won't be as easy, I don't think, as we go up a level, because you know, you're going to have a slight drop off in depth, you would have thought. And of course, you're up against better players, better coaches, fitter teams, probably, etc. But if you've got that core like we have behind Cookie, And he's clearly the leader of the band, isn't he? You know, he's the inspiration to both the coaches, everybody that works in the analysis team, the physios and everybody else, as well as the players. It's a great mix. And again, he seems to have got that balance spot on, doesn't he? You know, he was, like we were saying earlier, he was absolutely adamant we needed to invest in the training ground. But it's no good having a great training ground if you've nobody to coach the players when you're on the new pitches, have you? And, you know, the only one that's really still there from previous regimes is Danny Webb. And he's obviously earned his stripes with Paul, or else he'd have, you know, despite being kept on initially after taking over, he wouldn't have been here very long, I don't think. We're in a very fortunate position. Very fortunate.
Yeah, you were saying, Stu, about the strength of League Two, but Stuart, is it much stronger than the National League? Of course, we don't know. We've not been there for 6 years, so But in the 6 years we've been in the National League has got much stronger. I've not seen anything that's made me think that the League Two's got as much stronger as the National League has over that time. I think if the team that finished at the top of League Two played the team that finished at the top of the National League all the way down, I reckon the National League would win 12 and League Two would win 12. I don't think there's a massive step up in quality. I don't think it's like the step up in quality from League One to the Championship.
Well, teams that have recently, well, first and foremost, no National League promotion winner has ever been relegated in their first season in the AFL. So that tells you that they must come up as a fairly strong outfit, all of them, or strong enough. And over the last few years, you know, this year's champion team were National League winners 2 years ago. The runners up were National League winners last year, you know. Not started off really well and only really slid a bit when they lost their manager, you know, who knew how to win games in the National League with them, obviously.
But by all accounts, I think their owners have had a major hit on their business, does
they have, well? Yeah. And you wonder whether that kind of has a sort of a weakening effect in the background that eventually percolates its way through to the team. But by and large, I've not watched a lot of EFL 2 football over the last 6 years, you know. It can't be all that good if Mansfield get promoted, can it?
Well, Chesterfield beat two League Two sides the season before last, didn't they? And when in a significantly worse Chesterfield team.
Yeah,
I say significantly, not that. Not that much different, but, you know, they didn't have Naylor, Grigg, and still beat them comfortably. So, you know, so it just shows that
the general strength
will
though.
Be competitive next year. Let's just say that.
You'd expect players to be. No. I was just going to say you'd expect players to be fitter, stronger. And as you were saying earlier, I think feel better coached, you know, all of that. You'd expect there to be more good players in League Two teams than there are in National League teams, you know.
Well, one of my thoughts is what you get in League Two, you get a few financial basket cases that have dropped down. And we all know what that means. We've been through that. And you look at the ownership situation and see what they're like. Now, you know, I'm just looking at the current end of season table for League Two, and like you say, Stockport, Wrexham, and Mansfield are three of the powerhouses that have gone up. MK Dons, you can never quite figure out what they're going to do if they don't go up in the playoffs. Doncaster have a magnificent run under McCann since he's come back in. And you think, well, okay, if neither of those go up, they may be contenders. Crewe and Crawley are in there. Well, Crewe play the sort of football that Chesterfield like to play against. They've not got oodles of money. Crawley have got a strange ownership model, haven't they? They were battle against relegation at the start of the season. And then you look at other clubs in there, Barrow, Harrogate, Morecambe are a financial mess at the moment.
Ownership wise, they're a basket case.
Accrington and Newport, whilst not basket cases, haven't got resources. Grimsby and Colchester, you'd have thought, had done better than they've done this season. Colchester, with their owner, he's been reducing the amount of money that he's put in the club for years, hasn't he? So they're reaping what their owner has sown. Grimsby's new ownership doesn't seem to have taken off. Salford are in the doldrums, even though they can throw money at it. And you look at that and you think, right, okay, who's going to be the powerhouse side? I've not mentioned Bradford City. I've not mentioned AFC Wimbledon. I've not mentioned Gillingham. I've not mentioned Walsall. And you think that might be the case, that they may be there or thereabouts. But none of them are Stockport. None of them are Wrexham.
No. You'd expect Bradford to have one good season, wouldn't you?
But they just keep on having lots of not very good seasons, don't they?
They do, don't they? And Gillingham, have they still got that owner they had last time?
No, they've got new ownership.
Oh, right. Okay.
I don't know enough about them to know whether they're likely to be powerhouses or not.
Yeah.
They're American, aren't they? Their owners.
Forgotten.
Can go one or two ways.
Yeah, they were there or thereabouts the last couple of seasons, haven't they? But they've just sacked Stephen Clements. I think he's their third manager in 18 months or something. So they're quite clearly unstable.
We know what way that goes, don't we, from our own experience of doing that?
Yeah. Well, they finished 12th, so bang on mid-table obscurity. They only won nine games home. They won nine games away. So it sounds like there might be a bit of pressure on them at home. Because they ought to be doing it. They're lower than their natural home, aren't they, at that level? But, I'm looking at thinking, is there an absolute obvious contender that's in there, like we've seen with Wrexham and Stockport and Notts County in the National League? I can't see a natural
who's come down. Carlisle, Port Vale.
Fleetwood, Cheltenham and Port Vale.
Probably would push for promotion again, I think.
But they don't get enough people at home. They're going to struggle with the financial regulations, aren't they? Because they just don't get the home crowds.
Carlisle should be there or thereabouts.
Yeah. You'd think so, but they were absolutely cut adrift by Christmas, weren't they, more or less? You know, so you wonder what's going on there, if they could collapse with that much of a thud, you know.
16 points they were from safety.
Mm, yeah, so they were as terrible in their division as we were as good in ours.
I think you're right, Phil. I don't see anything in that division to be scared of. I think it might take us a week or two to sort of settle into it. A bit like Stockport did last year. They stumbled in the early weeks and then went on a run and never stopped and got in the playoffs and then got knocked out in the playoffs, didn't they, last year? And of course have strengthened again and gone up. I'd be amazed if we weren't at least playoffs. I really would.
Town can finish 22nd for me, so long as they reach the second round of the League Cup. That's all I want. It's been nearly 20 years.
The best thing about being in the National League is not getting knocked out in the first round of the League Cup, because we've achieved exactly what we've achieved over the last 6 years without playing, which is terrific. We've done as well in the League Cup when we've not been in the league as we do when we're in the league.
Away would be nice, wouldn't it? Derby away in the first round would be nice.
That'd be very, very good. Yeah.
There's a chance that we might be playing them pretty soon, so I don't know if you want them away again in the Cup.
There was word going around on Bob's board that they've been lined up for a friendly, isn't there?
Yeah.
We used to play them every year, so it's hardly unusual.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, they've only just gone up from League One, haven't they? And they've got what seems to be good ownership, proper owner. So well done to them. First time ever to Derbyshire.
I'll finish Phil's sentence. I've got Derbyshire teams that have been promoted in the same season. So yes, I don't know what we've got on the agenda and how close we got to it, but I can't think of what's on next. But star players, we've done that, haven't we?
How about where we've came from was the next thing on the agenda that you sent around. Is it a Lazarus style comeback?
Is it? Yeah.
Have we discussed all
from
that,
the really? Day we've just that we've done that really, haven't we? So I suppose it was a Lazarus style comeback, wasn't it? Because from being 0.08 of going to the National League North, and National League North is not an abyss, as Scunthorpe have found. It's very difficult to get out of.
And Boston in the final on 2-0 and wins on pens.
Could get promoted just on penalty shootouts, couldn't they? Which you know.
So we've been talking of improving standards in League Two. So QED, Chesterfield FC, need to improve its standards on the park. So where do we need to improve it, Paul Fisher?
Very good question. Defence, straight away. Let's go straight away in the defence, which, as I'll reflect on the interview you had with Kieran Dyer for the club's radio station, is the fact that they...
If you've not listened to it, it's on podcast and it's well worth a listen.
Very good. For all your other podcast providers after this one. So you can listen to Kieran Dyer, and they definitely said that they loaded up on attack, didn't they, this season? And kind of let the defence speak for itself, didn't they? Well, I think we conceded the most in the top eight, didn't we, or something? Suggest to me that that was left to its own devices. I think next season is going to be slightly different. I think there's going to be maybe three or four changes in defence.
Just to correct you, because we don't quite want incorrect in it. Top seven. Aldershot finished eight. Aldershot finished eighth, and they conceded millions.
He had a minus goal a minus difference goal. In the
Yes, minus nine goal difference they had in eighth place.
So there it is. I think some changes in defence. So not necessarily to change the players, perhaps to aid them and make them improve their abilities, you know. So you always play better when you know there's somebody behind you who's waiting to take your spot, I'm sure.
Freckleton offers pace. So if Chesterfield managed to recruit him for a season, you'd want to see him as battling with Jamie Grimes as opposed to battling with Clements or Horne.
Yes, I would say so, yes. Chesterfield do sign Freckleton, I expect him to be starting at left centre-back on game one in League Two.
Yeah. And do you think we, at that level, I know we're all out of touch a little bit, do you need an enforcer, a right-sided enforcer centre-half?
Yes. I don't think they'll change Williams and Palmer, to be honest. I think one of those two will be the starting centre-back for next season alongside Freckleton.
Yeah. Well, I can see there's a look on Daz's face. Are you going to add something that we may or may not know about that?
All I will say is, just because players had their contracts extended, do not assume they will be here in August.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
I think there'll be far more activity than the average fan in the street thinks there's going to be.
Yes. Hear what you're saying.
And I think that's in a number of areas. We will be having a
retain list podcast at some stage in the not too distant future. So we'll, when the list comes out and those available for transfer on that, we'll be able to discuss that a lot more.
Yeah, I think the other thing to bear in mind is we have been, although we didn't this season, we have been in the fortunate position for the last 6 years of being able to bring players in from July through to the end of March.
Yes.
And if you had a hole in the squad or an injury crisis or whatever, you could go and fill it with a loan or even a permanent signing. We're not in that game anymore. So you have got to get your squad right by the end of August. Yes, you can tweak it in January. But as we all know, tweaking a squad in January is different to panic buys like we did in the year we came down, which blew up in our faces. So it's a whole new discipline. One I'm sure Cookie and the coaches and all the powers that be are well aware of. So I think we've got to choose quality, but also depth. And I think if the numbers we were talking about earlier of, you know, as many keepers as you want, 22 players and kids, that should be enough. But up front, for instance, you can't go into the season with Quigley and Grigg. You just cannot.
No, absolutely not. No, no.
So I would really expect, I would expect at least two more forward players. I think we've got a hole on the right hand side of midfield. I think we've only really got Mandeville who can play that position. Jacobs has been out there. He's better coming off the, everybody we've got is better coming off the left or playing number 10. I think we've only really got Mandeville who can play what you would call a pseudo wide right role. As you say, you know, we've holes to fill. I think like Paul thinks some of them will be at the back. I can't see Bailey Clements staying. I think we all assume Lawrence Maguire will be released. But I think there'll be other changes people are not expecting.
Do we know when the club are having sitting down with the players and telling them if they haven't?
I think
done
they're
so
back. Already? They're back from Marbella. Was it yesterday or today?
All right.
And then
thank God for that.
And so I assume it will be done fairly quickly, Stu. And
yeah,
allow I'm not sure Jeff King and Mandeville are back yet.
But I think in the next couple of days, you may well hear.
Well, the thing is, the players will have been, I'll use the word contracted, but that's not the right word. I just can't think of an alternative to stay until at least next weekend, because that's when the player final is. Yeah. So, you know, they won't have booked their holidays, their proper holidays, until after the playoff finals. You've got the rest of this week that the players, when they kicked off in August, would have expected to have still been in and around the club. So it's got to be this week, I think, because, you know, if it had been another playoff job, you'd have played it on the Saturday, had your open top bus parade if necessary on the Sunday or whatever. Yeah. And the civic
cars on the Monday,
next season would have been as sometimes I've been around the end of this season. So yeah, they'll all expect it to be away for next Monday, I would guess. So, but I agree so far. Defence and attack, and the point that you just made about right side midfield, very good point as well. And we want to get to the stage, Stu, I assume, that we're not considering Liam Mandeville as an alternative right back. He did very, very well.
He did do very well, didn't he?
We want him to be a right sider, don't we? And like you say, we've got Colclough and Jacobs and Berry who are better on the left.
You know, he ain't going to get 20 assists from the right back position, is he, next season? So, yes, we want him further forward. So that's one area we can look at. Yeah, I suppose you could look at every position and think, well, we could improve that. I mean, of course you could. But, you know, the players that have come up have, I don't know, they've done all right by us, haven't they? And it's very difficult. I mean, Paul Cook was kind of teased around this very same question towards the end of the season, and he kind of refused to answer it out of respect to the players who had done so well for us, you know. So, I don't know, until we see who goes. But Daz's point about up front, yes. Yeah, because that dried up when Grigg got injured, didn't it? But
I'll ask you if you could, and I'll give you a few seconds to think about it. We'll talk about something before that. If you could think of one player, realistic player, to sign to add strength somewhere to the team in the summer, you know, that either you've seen in the National League or you know that is potentially realistic from the EFL, you know, who would be your player that you'd really, really love to sign? But yeah, I'll give you a moment or two to think of that. But you know, we'll just start winding up really by sort of thinking about what this means to the town. We touched on the trust and everything we've talked about the crowd. But what does it mean to the town? As you've always lived around here, what has this year meant to Chesterfield as a town?
I think he's put us back into national consciousness. We've done it for the last couple of years with the FA Cup runs. The record-breaking FA Cup runs we've had. Been live on the BBC on a Sunday lunchtime to beat Pompey, and you know, the featuring on Match of the Day cup special against Watford and stuff, and all that kind of thing. I think has put us back in national consciousness, as did the playoff final last year, because I think most people felt that was one of the games of the season in terms of drama. And just to have us associated with league football again, I think brings a whole. I think one of the council leaders or the mayor was saying, it's such a big thing for your name to be read out on the football scores and for you to be featured on the radio and so on and so forth. It just brings the whole level of the town and the area up a notch. And I think the whole town will benefit hugely from it. I really do.
Yes, you.
Gosh, what does it mean to the town? It restores a certain pride and dignity, doesn't it, in the town? You know, it's a town's. The town's had a football league club for 100 years or more. You know, and it was always used to having one. And there was a time. I don't know whether it's ever been the case or not, but it just seemed to me growing up that there was a time when you knew that towns commanded a certain amount of respect if they had a football league club. You know, that meant that they were of a certain size, and you know, there was enough going on in the town to support it. You know, so it was a big enough sort of place, and you kind of lost that. It wasn't quite the same for us because, well, there aren't kind of Paul's coupons anymore. But I remember the Accrington chairman, when they were slung out of the league or resigned from the league, saying that the town virtually disappeared off the map, because once a week, people weren't reading out Accrington Stanley on the football results anymore, you know? Mm. And so it restores that kind of feeling that you have a place in the football world, really, that you are part of this group of football league teams, you know, and that restores a certain pride, and people, just the way that people have been able to fall in love with the club again, you know? Mm. That's been the most warming thing for me this season, that I've been able to fall in love with the club again, you know. And I'm sure that's the same for a lot of people.
Yeah, Paul?
Yeah. Definitely sort of pride about it. Chesterfield Football Club is coming back to the Football League as fixed up. You know, it's had its surgery. It was slowly dying a death back in 2018, and it was horrible to see. And it's had surgery, some of it botched, but it's got fixed again since 2020, by and large. And it's gradually got better and, you know, got better and better with the help of the board. And a manager who cares about Chesterfield Football Club. He's not just any other manager looking to take £5 a week. And there's pride back in that the team realizes that they've gone to a low place and realized that actually Chesterfield is a big football club. Mm. You know, we never probably it's on our doorstep. We take it for granted. You know, we take it for granted that we get 2,500. We've been to, you know, the minimum in 1990, you could barely get any crowds. But now, when Chesterfield went down to the National League, they really saw what poor crowds were. And Chesterfield were dominating those. And now they're absolutely hammering it, and they're out of that league and now back in. So the sense of pride for me around established supporters that have been there. Chesterfield are back. Chesterfield are back where they should be. And that's for me.
Yeah, well said. Well said, guys. So, right, okay, if you've got
Daz wants
one name to put on the... Oh, yeah, Daz has got his finger up.
I was just going to say, it strikes me, I remember the demise of Lincoln not so long ago.
Yes.
And they were a basket case like we were a basket case. Mm. And they dropped into non-league. The crowds were one man and a dog. Nobody in the city and surrounding area cared. The Cowleys came in. They had the good cup run. They got promoted. They went to Wembley. I think they won the FA Trophy. And they came back into the Football League with gates and 9,000 at Sinsel Bank, which was completely unheard of. And they've largely kept that momentum going, and they had another promotion, and they've been building and building. They've had a couple of flirts with League One playoffs, almost did it again this year. Mm. And I think if you want to look at a club that have come from where we've been and where they can get to, Lincoln is a great example that we can look at and say, well, they've done it. We're on that journey and we can do the same.
Whilst I'm not going to argue with that one, Jock, because I agree with you 100%, I'd also look at Luton, Stu.
Yes, absolutely. Although they have far more tradition of playing top-level football than either us or Lincoln.
Yeah, they did, but they were a basket case, weren't they?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
And they don't get any more crowds than we get.
So, no.
You know, they're not capable. They can't all file through the garden at the same time, can they? So, okay, yeah, well, you've had time to think. One player. Paul's put his head back and he doesn't want to be asked first. Daz is looking at Louis. It looks like he's got a list. Have you got a list in front of you, Daz?
I have, but not of that.
So, if you were
a quarter of a pound of mint, bag of sugar.
I think we should get Mike Fondop back. Now, I worry slightly because I was listening to a Notts County podcast a few days ago because they've just made their release list and after their first foray back into the Football League, and they were absolutely confident they were going to have a cracking season and go straight back up and everything else, and they had the word coming out of Notts is they've been embarrassed defensively. They simply totally underestimated the level defensively. And that's my one worry. And I think we will go for a new leader, a big, quick centre half that can handle the level and probably above quite comfortably. I don't know who the name is, but I fear we need that player.
The name has been doing the rounds, hasn't it? I don't know if we're allowed to name the name. But,
name it.
Name it. Been going around. Well, yeah, name.
Shay Dunkley has been the name that's been doing the rounds, isn't it?
Yeah.
Shrewsbury. Mm-hmm. Big, powerful, perhaps not ex-Wigan, perhaps not. Yeah,
out of contract, but being offered one, I think.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
32.
Yeah.
Good age.
Evo-esque signing?
Possibly,
Could well be. Of course, who came back in to Paul Cook, didn't he? He re-signed him from Blackpool. I think it was Paul Cook that re-signed him from Blackpool, wasn't it? Yeah.
If I
remember. Yeah, no, that's a good call on the defence. I mean, I think it's beyond our means. But Johnson Clark Harris has not got a contract at Peterborough United, and whilst I think he'll be looking at going further up, he's good, and also somebody who's been at Rotherham this season that you'll have seen, which is the Mandeville cover, Paul, on loan from Luton.
Yeah, he's been, well, the unfortunate thing is he's been actually in the Luton team in the Premier League, so I don't know if he'd drop back down, but he actually made a couple of Premier League appearances.
Yeah, but he's been out of contract. He may well be
out of contract. He is out of contract, and I'm thinking Championship is his sort of calling. But having said that, you never know what pound notes could waft his way with a permanent position in the team, you know? So you never know. You never know.
Yeah, well, he played two games in the Premier League for Luton this season. He was offloaded to Rotherham. Yeah. And he only played 16 games in the Championship for Rotherham. And it's not very long ago he was playing in the Championship for Wickham, but he also had a couple of League One seasons for Wickham and League Two season for Wickham. Mm. So he knows the division. Mm. And he's a big, tall, strong lad, isn't he? And quick. So.
Yeah, he's quick. Yeah. He's a good player. We saw him at Millwall, didn't we, many years ago?
Yes. Yes, I remember as a young lad. Mm. Yeah. Yeah. So who would you go for, Paul?
Very good question, this. But I've been impressed by an Altrincham player, but not necessarily CCC. So, not him.
Linney, you're going to say Linney, aren't you?
I did like Regan Linney. Yes, it is Regan Linney. I thought he's an in-your-face centre-forward is quicker than quickers. And would do a lot of donkey work. And I really like him. There's something about him. And he's only, I think, 24. So yeah, I quite like him.
Yeah, I liked him as well. Have I asked you, Stuart?
I volunteered the rumoured Shane Dunkley. But,
you did. Yeah, that's good enough. We've all had a little pop there.
Yeah. Well, go on, yeah. No, I was just thinking of the forward thing and thinking of Ronan Curtis, who I think, may not have a contract with AFC Wimbledon. He's supposed to favour the left side, but I think he's played central a lot for Portsmouth previously.
Harry Pell's left Wimbledon, by the way, as well. He's not been offered a new deal. So yeah. All right.
Well, he'll get something.
Should do, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so there you go. Well, that's it. There's a few thoughts about where we want to improve. And of course, all these names are just speculation. You know, I know Dunkley's name's been bandied around, but by the end of next week, there'll be 27,000 more names bandied around, don't they? And the ones that count, the Will Griggs and the Tom Naylors and the James Berrys, the ones that actually do sign and become proper, fully-fledged Spireites. And we're all looking forward to seeing that in League Two next season. I feel for Pete Whiteley. We'll have to change all the numbers for all the players, yeah, because he's had a little N1 for National League. So some of these guys are going to have a new league number, aren't they, to carry on in that vein? But hey, we'd have all settled for that. I think the little Japanese doll in the trophy cabinet will have its eye painted in, because that's a good luck charm that you're supposed to paint its eye in when you make a wish and paint the other eye in when it comes true. And I think the wish may well have been returning to the National League. It wasn't my wish, but I do believe the person who did make that wish will be wanting to paint that eye in at some stage now that wish has come true. So thanks for listening to me, Phil Tooley, Paul Fisher, Stuart Baston and Daryl Carpenter. I do urge you, as I mentioned earlier on, to listen to Weekend Warm-Up, and it's Paul Cook from back in 2012, just to see what his views were when he first walked into the building at Chesterfield after being manager of Accrington Stanley. It'll be an interesting listen. So we'll be back sooner than you think, talking about the retain list when Paul Cook and co make that clear what it'll be. So enjoy the rest of the week. Enjoy looking at the empty seats at Wembley at the weekend, and we'll see who wants to join us. Oh dear, it's a hard one, isn't it? I'm not even going to speculate, because the answer is neither. Thanks very much. See you next time.
We'll meet again, don't know where, don't know when, but I know we'll meet again some sunny day. Keep smiling through, just like you always do, till the blue skies dry. drive the dark clouds far away. So will you please say hello to the folks that I know? Tell them I won't be long. They'll be happy to know that as you saw me go, I was singing this song. We'll meet again. Don't know where, don't know when, but I know we'll meet again some sunny day.
And if you like this podcast, then don't forget to subscribe. Please rate and review us on Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts, and many of your favorite podcast providers. Oh.